Welcome back. This is Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and joining us now is Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His new book is Between the Graves. It's about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia, based on thousands of previously secret documents. He's also at work on a comparative Cold War history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roger Morris.
Thank you.
And the debate last night of the Republican candidates on the national security build as the commander-in-chief debate, how did it strike you?
Well, I was reminded, Ian, of an experience I had in writing a book on the Clintons. I found a theme park in northern Arkansas, which was patterned after the old comic strip. You may remember Little Abner by Al Capp. And the sign outside the theme park said, you've got a great past ahead of you. And I was thinking how much the how much past we had ahead of us if we elected any of these candidates. There may come a time with the renewed zeal for torture and for bombing Iran and for punishing our friends and our enemies that we will be missing George W. Bush. I guess it could have been worse. I was relatively impressed at the difference between the candidates, Santorum and Bachman, and of course Newt Gingrich, who had actual Washington experience, and certainly Huntsman, who had the experience as an ambassador abroad, and the others, who were such rank amateurs and often sort of ridiculous in their comments. But that's sort of faint praise and I think faint comfort. This is not a group of candidates who speak to the future by any means, and of course their rather atavistic and sterile approach to the Iranian problem was the chief example of that.
But given, Roger Morris, that there was so much cheering for torture and fairly strenuous objections from Ron Paul, and of course you had booing and cheering in both cases from the audience, what's the dichotomy there in the Republican Party between the fundamentalists and isolationists on the one hand and the libertarian non-interventionists on the other?
Well, I think Ron Paul reminds them of what they once had for a conscience, obviously. He reminds them of the Constitution. He reminds them of the Bill of Rights. He reminds them of the rule of law. These are things that conservatives used to care about. He unfortunately, I think, is no more than a rather minor rump, and he's certainly being marginalized and ignored, as is Huntsman, by the mainstream media. I thought CBS's and National Journal's treatment of both of them was scurrilous, really. But Ron Paul, I think, is speaking as the conscience of that party on the right. He's somewhat in the position. I'm reminded again of history in American politics. Eugene Victor Debs, the socialist candidate in 1912, who was alongside Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and William Howard Taft. I mean, he's the odd man out here, but of course speaking to and for principle, which is why he gets the cheers of the audience from time to time. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to translate at all into any kind of strength at the ballot box.
So, what are the chances then of the so-called front runner, who nobody seems to be excited about on the Republican side, Mitt Romney? Now, I suppose mathematically he has an advantage as long as those others keep in the race. They cancel each other out, and he ends up being the winner by default, because I think the sort of second thought that the voters probably have is, well, he's the most likely to get elected. We don't like him, but he's most likely to get elected. What's your sense of why this guy's been around for so long and hasn't gotten any traction?
Well, I think he's better organized, relatively speaking, than the other candidates. He certainly is still very well financed. You know, this is not the survival of the fittest; it's the survival of the richest, and therefore of the best organized in the early primary states. I think the casualties will come quickly and be pretty sweeping in the early primaries. I think by the end of January, you're going to know pretty much who the finalists are in this. And I do think one of the interesting virtues of the Republican primary electorate is that they do tend, to the extent that they understand the meaning of the word principle, they do tend to stick with that. I think they are averse to Romney. He is such an empty suit in terms of anything abiding by way of conviction or even his own policy practice, and I think everybody sees that all too clearly, and I think the main beneficiary of that, ironically, is Newt Gingrich, who last night came across, after all, as a man who sort of understood the larger picture and who had actually an instrumental and practical policy approach to Washington. He got a lot of nodding to the side from Santorum, and even to some extent from Bachman, from the other Washington creatures. I think Gingrich is the beneficiary of the sort of anybody but Romney, and of course the rap on him is quite different. He's got his own baggage, but wouldn't be the first time that we've seen the renovation and resurrection of an American politician. Richard Nixon, you'll remember, Ian, came into the 1968 campaign at the very beginning as pretty much used goods. He had been defeated in 1960 and then in 62 for the governorship of California, but he had worked his way back methodically. There had been some rough spots in the road, but he ended up winning the nomination. He was not necessarily the darling of the party. I think there was very strong support even then for Ronald Reagan, and certainly Rockefeller had his adherents, but it was a case of sort of nobody but Nixon really available to run against then the Democrats with Hubert Humphrey and what I think was a very volatile and open-ended election.
So, Roger Morrison, you mentioned baggage. What I find extraordinary is that so many of these candidates not only have baggage, like in Gingrich's case with the various wives that he jettisoned when they're inconvenient, but I think, and then now you've got the bizarre businessman Kane. He, of course, his baggage should be front and center, but the press have been completely inept at pinning him down. But at the last Republican debate, when the moderator asked him about the scandals swirling around him, it's not just one woman; it's now I think about four. So the theory of probability is such that you'd think, you know, that somebody better at least pin this guy down.
Two is company and three is a crowd, I think.
but sure. But the point is that they not only did they boo the question about sexual harassment, then they cheered his non-answer. So I just get the impression that there's absolutely no kind of moral basis to why people vote. And it's particularly ironic given that the Republican primary voters are these so-called Christian conservatives.
Well, it's the height of hypocrisy, of course, and cynicism in all of this. The only thing stronger than the prejudices and the mythology on the right is their moral relativism about their own candidates. These are very much the same people who supposedly found Bill Clinton so repugnant because of his moral turpitude, and who would be the first to pounce on a Democratic candidate who had any of Mr. Kane's four women in the closet. This is sort of the hopeless, bankrupt condition of American politics. One must not look here for intellectual or moral consistency in any of this. And of course, you're as a result, you're not getting it in any of the practical policy matters that were discussed last night. I'm sometimes less than disappointed with Huntsman. I think he may be a bit more sensible on some things, but he was very disappointing last night at the end about the European debt question. And he takes a bull in the china shop approach to some of these things. We don't have any refinement in any of these candidates, and I think that poses, because it's still going to be a close election. We've got 7 or 8 states that are really going to be up for grabs, including the perennial Ohio. Obama is by no means a shoo-in. And one of those creatures last night could end up on the Capitol steps on January 20th. So that's a rather sober thought.
Well, Roger Morris, you'd think, though, that given Huntsman's numbers in the polls and the clearly the Republican Party's uncomfortable with his, you know, more traditional, you know, old school Republican positions, why doesn't he go for broke? Why does he try to pander in any way? He should.
You know, it's a question I've asked myself, and I think because he is still very much hostage to or captive of this notion that he can somehow appeal to the extreme right, to the what all of the handlers in that party are tell their candidates that they must somehow get these primary voters if they have any chance of getting to a general election. I think that's an utter illusion on his part. I couldn't agree more. I think he needs to go all out and to distinguish himself as much as Ron Paul distinguishes himself from the rest of the field, and to say, you know, I'm the best of both worlds. I know government. I've been in government, but I'm not a creature of Washington, D.C. I don't bring a lot of personal baggage here, and I've really got some fresh and new ideas. But the time is getting very, very short. He might survive on his sheer personal investment. He might survive the first or second cut. You could come down to a case of Gingrich, Romney, and Huntsman, in which case he would get more attention. But whether he would make the necessary shift at that point, I just don't know. The other joker in the deck here is that while Gingrich comes across pretty well in these debates, he is an absolutely terrible campaigner. He's not very good on the stump. We've seen that again and again. And in addition to his baggage, which I think people are so desperate these days, they will tend to overlook that more than they would in an ordinary election year. But Gingrich is not the strongest horse on the track here when it comes to places like Iowa and New Hampshire, where you've got a lot of personal campaigning.
So, Roger Morris, we talked about the lack of a moral compass and any kind of ethical basis to a lot of what the Republicans who you know are pandering to the religious right voters, but they seem to be quite happy with sexual harassers and a guy that basically can't even remember his own simple-minded platform. I'm talking about Perry. He couldn't remember his own ridiculous ideas. But there's a nastiness out there, and not just a nastiness. I mean, when they cheered the idea that some, you know, when a hypothetical question about what would you do if somebody that couldn't afford their medical care and didn't have health insurance, you know, would you pull the plug? They all yelled, yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's that feeling. There's also the crazy stuff that Bachman says, you know, dividing America in a McCarthyite way, talking about socialism. I mean, the absurdity of that. I mean, she's been collecting money for all these foster kids she's got, plus they've been getting farm benefits from, but she's at the same time says we shouldn't, people shouldn't get unemployment, we shouldn't pay people, we shouldn't feed them if they're not working. I mean,
well, I couldn't agree more. I think the nastiness is there, mixed with a political regression. These were all throwback candidates. They're hard to imagine on a stage 8 or 16 years ago. Hard to imagine them standing there next to even George H.W. Bush or even Ronald Reagan. I mean, this is not the same Republican Party. The only possible redeeming factor in all of this is that the people who tend to attend these debates and give the kind of vocal response that they give in soundbite clips and in the debates themselves may well be the more radical fringe of the party. We hear a lot about how radical and mindless and atavistic this rump is, this 15 to 20% of the Republican electorate in a primary. I wonder if it can possibly be quite that bad. I'm hoping it's not. You've got a new factor this year in terms of the economic distress, which has affected a lot of these right-wing Republican voters as much as anyone. They're frightened to death of the implications of Obamacare and other issues. It may tend to make them a little more practical, a little more savvy in making that final decision, which means pushing them toward a more responsible candidate. These people are not, after all, blind to what constitutes the American center. They deplore that center. They think the media represents left of center. They think that the country and the odds, the system, is stacked against them. They're right about much of that. They sort of know, I think, instinctively, that they cannot nominate one of their own with any reasonable hope of getting rid of Obama. And getting rid of Obama, we mustn't ever forget, is the chief purpose of all of this. I mean, Gingrich and other candidates have said this again and again. You know, the one thing we have in common is that we really all want to end this administration. And that may have its effect in these primary choices. But you're absolutely right. It's a nasty and mindless, generally very, very depressing situation.
Well, that explains, of course, Roger Morris, the gratuitous Obama bashing, particularly from Romney. But just in closing, I don't understand why somebody, and you know, if at least in the press or somewhere, I know that the conservatives in this country believe in their heart and soul, in the depths of their bones, that there is this vast liberal media out there. It's an absurd notion from somebody that's actually in the liberal media, but on the way on the left of it, and knowing how ineffectual the liberal media really is. The just to call them on the utter stupidity and hypocrisy of their positions, particularly a Bachman, and this is just in general the moral vacuum here in terms of ethical values and moral standards that they purport to uphold. Well, I mean, giving a prize, the Family Research Council gave a prize as champion of the family or something to Joe Walsh, this deadbeat Tea Party congressman who owes his wife and kids $100,000 back child support.
No, I think the silence, the cowardice of the media really is explained by what's been going on for a long time. They really are afraid of the backlash from a very small but disciplined and focused group. They're afraid of the money that's on the other side, and which can cost them in various ways. I just think they don't want ever to have that label liberal stick in any sense. So they bend over backwards and in effect become hopelessly shallow in their approach. So no one is going to call them on the more outrageous aspects of this Ian. And of course last night dealt with the single most important subject in any election. That's national security and what a president does about life and death issues. And now with the state of the American economy and globalism and all the rest, it's life and death issues both at home and abroad that affects the entire country. Huntsman said that very eloquently, I think, last night. This was in the end, I think, a depressing debate because there really were no new ideas. We stand to do something awful with Iran if any of these people are elected, and to continue on this course, basically, in Afghanistan and with torture and all the rest, and the erosion of civil liberties that Ron Paul talked about so eloquently.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Roger Morris.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Johnson and Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His new book, Between the Graves, is about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia, based upon thousands of previously secret documents. He's also at work on a comparative history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia in the Cold War. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the decline of public morality and ethical values indicated by the Penn State scandal.
So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too, and you're giving mister a bad name, mister like you. So I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name, cause it's mister like the rest of us to shame. It's a Mr. Light.